come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Thanks for listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. We're the book club for movies,
right?
podcast where every week our movie is chosen, not completely at random, round robin, by one of the Saturday Night Freak Show superstars. And we watch it, then we sit around and talk about it for your listening pleasure and education. Who are these internet radio superstars?
Holly.
I'm Brandon.
Michaela.
And I'm Colin. Brandon, where would the listeners know you from?
A few things, maybe. I do another podcast with some friends called Sock Monkey Sound. You can find that at Sock Monkey Sound, I guess. I'm sure we have an email and a Twitter handle and all that shit, but I just get drunk and talk about music.
So. It's out there in the interwebs.
There you go. It's also my third time as on the Saturday Night Freak Show.
A three-peat.
So next time I'm on, I get to pick a movie. Right?
Yeah. Isn't that how it goes?
Well, somehow you skipped out on your second episode because you can't even remember what it was. You were on Deconstructing Harry.
I was on Deconstructing Harry, which is an interesting choice for a freak show movie. I liked it. I love Woody Allen, so whatever. Yeah.
But you can find us, well, you already did, maybe, but iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Google Play, and more. And if you like what you hear here, give us a star rating.
All of a sudden, you're here.
Yeah. Give us a star, a like, a thumbs up, a review. We'd really appreciate it if you can help us find other people like yourself. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to talk about the movie for a little while. Then we're going to answer some listener mail.
That's right.
How can the listeners get a hold of us? Probably on Facebook.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show.
On Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
And via email.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com.
So we'll read that later on, and then we'll come back and do our final wrap-ups where you'll find out what everyone thought of tonight's movie.
But tonight, we watched a movie chosen by...
Colin!
Colin, what did we watch?
We watched Night of the Creeps.
It was great.
It was from the year 1986. And directed by a fellow known as Fred Decker.
Of Monster Squad fame. Check out our previous episode on Monster Squad.
And he also co-wrote
House.
That's
the
right.
House.
Check out our previous House episode. And he also wrote and directed
what?
RoboCop 3.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh.
That's right. Yeah.
Wasn't there a more recent movie he wrote on that was like, wait, what? He wrote that? Like,
well, he is currently in the process of, as we are writing that, or as we're recording this, they're making The Predator.
That's right.
Which is written by Fred Decker and directed by Shane Black. So it's Fred and Decker, or Black and Decker.
Bam. Yeah.
Well done. All right.
These are the people who made the Monster Squad. So, I mean, it's in good hands, right?
I hope so.
Shane Black is in the original Predator.
The cast worries me more and more. The more cast that comes out for that movie, the more I'm...
I mean, let's be honest. Anything that's being remade is worrisome nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just be
culture
real.
We live in.
Yeah.
I mean, what's a recent remake that you guys thought was really well done?
I like Dawn of the Dead. The Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead. But
Evil Dead. The Evil Dead remake.
I thought Evil Dead remake.
Evil Dead.
Yeah. Freddy Alvarez. I'll go see anything that guy directs, you know?
Yeah. All right. So Night of the Creeps is... a movie that I like to consider part of the fun horror genre from the 80s. Mm-hmm. Seems like the 80s was when we got a lot of these movies. How would you describe a fun horror movie? Like of this type?
It doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like semi-self-aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like camp on purpose, but not ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Like the fact that in this he literally goes, what is this, a B-movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a homicide scene or a B-movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it predates like the Scream era of complete self-awareness where, you know, everybody's aware that they're, you know, in a movie and mocking the tropes of it.
Right.
But, I mean, there's enough of it in this where you can kind of, like, you know, see that they're kind of heading that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like an homage to, like, 50s and 60s science fiction movies.
Oh, in the beginning it very
and
much
horror
is.
Films. It's, yeah.
I kind of liked that. I thought that was really interesting.
That first scene that took place in the 50s ever was, like, the exact scene from The Blob.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Exactly.
I thought, too, like, the first, like, 15 minutes of this movie where it's, like, a couple on Lover's Lane and everything was very much, like, Texarkana Moonlight Killer story. Just note by note lifted into that.
And, well, it's the urban legend of the hook, right? Because I'm like, I've always wanted to, there was a point in time where I'm like, I got to make a short film of this. And of course, people have. But the idea that there's, you know, a couple on Lover's Lane and there's an escaped mental patient and,
it's like the most famous horror story.
Yeah.
I think it really is. Yeah. Like it's a campfire story.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, actually we should preface this by the movie before it starts out.
Before
in the 50s,
that even.
Yeah. It starts out in space.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw this, this was not what I expected from this movie.
Nope.
No. Not what I expected.
It starts off with like, it looks like a corridor out of the movie Alien or something. And then all of a sudden that is deflated or made better by the fact that like these tiny little aliens.
Holly, how would you describe those aliens?
I describe them as Teletubbies from The Hills Have Eyes. That's how I describe them.
Yeah, they were very, I mean, it was funny. I mean, but that scene and then into the rest of the movie. I was just like, man, what a hard, like, that's a weird.
It almost feels tacked on. Like, it feels like it was done in post. So, like, they threw it on at the end.
So completely two separate movies. I want to watch that movie.
Yeah.
I really want to watch that movie.
Like, yeah, Hills Have Eyes, Teletubbies carrying what looks like canisters from Secret of the Ooze, Ninja Turtles. Yeah.
I'm on board. I want to watch that movie.
Yeah. And it's like some kind of experiment that they're trying to contain. And the possessed one, because there was the one with the white eyes.
There's your movie, Colin.
Shoots
Night of the Creeps prequel. Yeah. We get that story. There's
that
your
actually
movie.
Takes planet place on the their planet or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Planet of the Creeps. Yep.
Planet of the Creeps.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm going to say. That movie would have been just fine without that 45-second exposition scene of how those things... like.
That was not necessary at all.
No, but awesome.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. But like, it feels to me like it was done in post. Like, to me they were like, you know, we should add this on at the beginning.
You figured the budget that they had, you know, whatever it cost to make those little creatures and the, you know, the spaceship hallway, unless they just have one of those laying around in Hollywood, they probably do.
I'm curious if there was anyone famous inside those costumes. Like, is there a Warwick Davis in there or something like
that? Yeah, or Deep Roy? Yeah. He would be,
Or Vern Troyer, even.
Well, it feels like you're saying
young Peter Dinklage.
It feels like two movies, but it almost feels to me like three. You know, the fact that we go from the space movie to then this black and white 1950s sorority row thing.
It's very much this director. I mean, what I got from it, it's very much this director is like, I really want to make this kind of movie. I also really want to make this kind of movie. And I also really want to make this kind of movie.
But I'm only going to get the funding for one.
The
so here.
For one. Yeah. That's
this
how
movie
it felt
wears its influences on its sleeve 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can say that by the last names of everybody in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Cronenberg, Landis,
Carpenter,
Raimi, Carpenter, Hooper. There was another one. I wrote them all down. Hold on.
Cameron,
Romero.
Everyone's. There was like a period in time when that movies were doing that. They were, you know, even like The Howling.
Mm-hmm.
I think names all of its characters after werewolf movie directors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's paying homage.
But that's
to,
a little bit more of a deeper cut than like, you know, werewolf movies is much more of a niche group than like Raimi, Hooper, Carpenter. Those
just
are all
like,
all the mainstream horror directors of this time.
Well, they even had the janitor at the cryo facility was Miner, and that's the guy who directed Fred Decker's house, you know, Steve Miner. So he's working everybody in there. If you're working in horror movies right now, boom, your last name is in this movie. But yeah, the opening scene, or, you know, the 50s scene, with the kids on Lover's Lane, you know, as Brandon said, it's straight out of The Blob, where a fireball comes from space and lands in the woods. And so what are you going to do? You're going to go check it out.
Obviously.
And then the thing's like going to jump in, you know, the little slug creature is going to jump into your mouth.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens, because everybody goes to these things that fall from space and poke them.
That being said, if I saw something fall from space, I thought it was close.
I'd go check it out.
I would go check it out.
Right? Yeah. Fuck yeah, absolutely.
So I can't blame anybody for that.
You know how much meteorites probably sell for on eBay?
Right?
There's like a fucking, some sort of like rock on there that's like worth more than platinum.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Until you touch it and then it gets on you and you start growing, like turning green and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Creep show? Anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
Something. So the main character, well, okay, so I guess the guy that's infected, so the creeps of this movie are these little slug-like creatures that go in through your mouth and then they gestate, lay eggs in your brain and take you over, turning you into a zombie. So then the third, you know, part of the movie is going to become a zombie film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But this guy gets cryogenically frozen for, what was it, like 20 odd years.
Why was he cryogenically frozen? Yeah.
I can only assume that they found the alien meteor and knew that could, because he was found close to it. Thought he was infected. Let's freeze him.
He had the creeps inside him.
All they had of to them? Preserve it. There was like a ton of them in the canister.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we saw, only one of them, it only takes one to infect you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am looking.
Brandon's breaking down the logic of this movie. Oh, no. Where'd the other ones go? How come there wasn't an outbreak in 59? Well,
why was that?
That's the other movie, the other prequel.
Why was that the... So the authorities back then found like a zombie dude and like, all right, well, let's freeze his ass.
Yep. Smart move. Mm-hmm. Preventative measure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
We'll make it someone else's problem in the future. That's future like people's problem,
until
not ours.
We know how to deal with this. We're just going to make him into a corpsicle.
Really like dingy college basement.
Where he looks like Zordon in a tube.
Yeah.
He's lit up like Zordon from Power Rangers in that cryogenic tube.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
The whole thing was weird.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, but it made no sense. If you look too much into it, there's some giant holes you can poke in it for sure.
Well, you just got to go with the logic of the 50s, I guess, sci-fi movie, right? That they're up to. Okay, I know. That doesn't hold water.
My question started with the little Teletubbies. Why is the little guy trying to get rid of the creeps and the other ones are shooting him?
Because he was possessed by the creep.
One got to him.
Yeah, he had the white eyes of the...
Yeah, but do you have enough wherewithal as...
At that point in time.
...an infected person to want to preserve the rest of them like that? They seemed a little more...
The movie's a little loose on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because later on, there is a character who gets infected and is able to talk and is articulate.
Right.
And,
Maybe that was like love that made him do that. Like he's loved his best friend.
Maybe. Well, he also said that there was
a point
in time when you become a zombie and you're able to, like, because he was dead at that point, but he was still able to have motor functions and some type of awareness.
How was that? Because everybody else was like instantly a fucking zombie, basically.
Yeah.
Like the Bradster.
The lab assistant. Because
he was like right outside her door and it got him in the mouth, and then he immediately it was just a zombie and didn't have any.
That's what I'm saying. It's playing a little fast and loose with the rules here.
I don't mind. Oh, forgive me.
So our main character, then the movie moves forward to 1986, and we meet our main characters, JC and
Chris.
And Chris.
Yeah.
It was like a Chris Romero and somebody also Carpenter.
It was a hyphen name. I think it was Carpenter Hooper. It was a hyphen name. It was two last names. Because the way like when the guy came up to him, he was like blah, 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 and like read off their names, it was very pointed that they were references. Mm-hmm. Like it was real ham fisted. Oh, yeah.
How many times in that one scene did he say Raimi?
Yeah.
All right, Raimi.
Detective Landis. Yeah.
Well, our main characters are two freshmen in college. It's pledge week, and that's also why we're doing the show like now, right? Because mm-hmm. still prom is going on. Or no, it's
although this is college. Yeah,
although pledge week would also be like in September.
Okay.
You got me. I just remember formal wear. That was why last week I was like, we're going to watch prom movie.
That actually confused me. I was like, wait, are they going to prom? Oh, no, they're in college.
It's just
wait,
what?
Formal. Yeah. I was like, formal for no reason. Yeah.
I think it was probably like homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Pledge week.
But even still, homecoming in college, you don't go to a dance.
Yeah. It's just like, hey, there's a formal tomorrow night. I mean, I'll go to a formal whenever.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon likes formals.
That sounds like fun.
Why not? You get to wear tuxes?
A tux. You went and rented a tux.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So these two, to get him to the formal, he's got to have a date. So it's Chris, like, sees the girl of his dreams here.
Cynthia Cronenberg.
Right. Another reference.
Cronenberg.
That's such a common last name, you know? It's like,
really is.
Like well, this Smith is also, I wonder if any of you guys seen Cronenberg's early movie. It was either called Shivers or They Came From Within.
Yeah, I've seen Shivers. Yeah.
It's about slugs that get into your body.
Okay. Which also, like, okay, so like I said, this movie, like, really wears its influences on its sleeve, but After watching this, I realized how many movies took things from this. Mm-hmm.
Slither?
Oh, James Gunn has to love this movie. There's no way James Gunn has not seen this movie. Oh, yeah. Like, it's, Slither is very much inspired by this.
Yeah, because in Slither, something comes from space. They're little slugs.
They look the same. They just move better because they're not on fishing wire.
Right, Well, it's the helpful, advent of Blu-ray, super sharp HD technology. We can see that because I never saw that, back when it was on VHS. But now, you can see the little filament line or whatever that they're pulling the little practical.
All over the place.
Creatures. All over.
So we have these two freshmen that want to pledge to the Beta fraternity so he can then get the girl of his dreams. He thinks that's just going to do it. Typical freshman, right?
Well, she's at a frat party.
She was at a frat party.
They're not far off.
Put two and two together. and now that guy was Rusty.
From European vacation.
That's right.
Yeah.
The poor man's Anthony Michael Hall.
Yep.
Doing his best Anthony Michael Hall impression
that
whole movie. Even like the eye rolls behind where she couldn't see and everything. It was all there.
The sweaters, the hair, it was all there,
Well, it had to be why they cast him in National Lampoon, because it was like, because how many movies did Anthony Michael Hall do? Just
there's
the first
only
one?
There's,
the kids change out
every... They change every movie,
So he was the best Anthony Michael Hall impersonator of...
I thought he did a damn good job.
Yeah, he did pretty good. I mean... Yeah, he was dedicated.
And his friend was on crutches, but not like...
I thought you were saying he was on a show called Crutches? No, he's actually on crutches.
In the movie, his character is on crutches, but not like I rolled an ankle crutches. Like
cerebral palsy crutches. Which like made me make a huge leap to be like, is this proto like Walt Jr.? Like I was like... No, I'm just thinking that because it's the same type of crutches. That's the only reason I'm thinking that. Yeah, I know. I thought that at first. I was like, it's just because he has dark hair and has crutches. That's the only reason I'm thinking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess his function in the movie, is to be supportive best friend. And he, because he figures that he's never going to get a girlfriend, he's going to help his buddy get in with Cynthia.
But he's got way more charisma.
Because he has nothing to lose. He doesn't give a fuck. That's why.
I mean, the guy's wearing Hawaiian shirts with fishing vests. He's got nothing to fucking lose at this point.
Yeah. He's got like a great like perspective, I guess, on college life, which is, because even when he's in with the cops, like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, how much trouble am I going to get in here? Really?
Yeah. What are you going to do to me?
Yeah.
He's got the right idea because that's way more attractive than the other guy. The other
confidence,
guy was,
right?
The other guy was annoying as shit. I was like, I like this kid.
Yeah, which is kind of funny that, because he's the one who's approaching Cynthia. I kind of figured that, I know this is the way the movie's going to go, but it seems like, wouldn't it be a twist?
Later in that movie, when she knocks on their dorm room, I swear, and he and Anthony Michael Hall opens the door. I thought she was going to ask to go on a date with the other guy.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought that was going that way.
That guy that did all the talking to her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did all the heavy lifting.
Right.
He did. It was solid, man.
Yeah.
He had a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia's dating the Bradster, who's an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of the...
Who looks significantly older than everyone else in this movie.
Oh, like, literally it's the hair. Kicks the crutches out from under.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a jerk. Well, you have to establish that the Bradster and his cronies are awful, right? Because all the fraternity guys are.
All 80s frat guys are awful.
Yep.
All
is there a movie where 80s frat guys... Is there a movie where frat guys are the good guys?
Animal House.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because, now, when you see, is 22 Jump Street?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what was the one with Neighbors? The
Neighbors.
Yeah.
Those goddamn annoying fucking frat.
Old school.
Old school.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So maybe it's split. Maybe there are.
But 80s.
Yeah.
80s, it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare. Animal House is an exception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, even then, I wouldn't necessarily want to hang out with the dudes. Like,
No.
There's lots of beer drinking and pledge.
I mean, all
pranks.
The stereotypes were there, but it's just like slamming brews, talking about getting laid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Calling each other bros. Brew. Yeah.
This movie does start with, as Brandon pointed out, some of the worst ADR I've ever seen in my entire life.
I couldn't believe it.
It took a good 10 seconds to figure out who was talking.
It took a really long time for us to figure out who
was
talking.
It was a
shock. I thought the movie was narrated.
Yeah.
Like, I thought there was,
how bad it was
a narrator, and I was like, oh, that's kind of weird.
I had started when we were in college.
Yeah.
The shot was so far panned out.
I bet you're wondering how I got here.
Yeah, exactly.
The shot was so far panned out, but their voices were on the mic. Like, right in front of you.
Yeah, and they weren't color-coded, so you didn't draw your attention directly to them right
no,
away.
No, you had to wait till they walked square into frame to figure out who was talking.
I was looking around at all the people in that shot, and I'm like, all right, who's talking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And trying to figure it out.
Well, they pull a prank at the behest of the betas to go and, you know, get a cadaver out of the morgue and drop it off at one of the sorority houses. But they break into the basement, which has the cryogenic storage facility, and end up setting loose the corpsicle, as JC calls it. And that, of course, you know, eventually starts the plot in motion because then the slugs get out of its brain. Mm-hmm. But called in to investigate this is Detective Ray Cameron, played by
Tom Atkins.
The Tom Atkins. Now, this guy has been in movies since, I don't know, the late 70s. I mean, like, mostly, you know, him through like John Carpenter stuff.
Escape from New York, Halloween 3.
The Fog.
The Fog.
He's like the lead guy in The Fog.
And in this movie, he does the same thing he does in every movie. Drink, smoke, answer the phone really dramatically. Thrill me. Yeah.
And he's like, the first shot is him like sleeping with a Raymond Carver novel. And I've been trying to look up on my phone for a minute and I cannot find it. Who is that super stereotypical like 50s noir writer? Raymond Chandler.
Yeah, because he did Philip Marlowe. But that's what I think what they're going for here. He's the gumshoe. Totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a cop, but he's hard-boiled, right?
Yeah.
Wears the trench coat, smokes and drinks.
Wears Hawaiian shirts unbuttoned halfway down all the time.
And has witty catchphrases. I just love the fucking attitude.
I would say ham-fisted.
Thrill me every time he answers the phone.
It's Miller time. There was no setup or knockdown for that. That just came out of nowhere.
It was all over the place. It's Miller time.
If his last name was Miller... Perfect. Would have worked great.
Well, it ties in because
they used it in Ghostbusters and it was okay.
It ties in because they were the only product placement in that movie was fucking Miller High Life.
Yeah,
Pepsi
everywhere.
There was some Pepsi. Yeah,
and she's
like, half turned Pepsi.
She's like pure, so she's not drinking booze. She's drinking like a Pepsi
For the new generation.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But Miller High Life everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere.
It's pretty cool.
It's the official beer of the.
Night of 80s.
Pi, Theta, Epsilon. No.
They were the betas.
The betas.
But Tom Atkins has had like this really long career. You know, I mean, it seemed like for a while he was in everything, you know, Creepshow. He was the dad and, you know, mm-hmm. he was on all these movies that, you know, you grew up watching. And it's like, this guy is awesome because he's just a badass in all the movies that he's in. And then he showed up again in Drive Angry. Or no, sorry, he was in My Bloody Valentine. And Drive Angry. It's like they rescued him. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
I liked that in Drive Angry, too, they led up to his reveal, too. Like, it was a big build-up to, like, it's Tom Atkins.
Yeah,
but, like, I imagine there was a lot of people that saw Drive Angry and like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, like...
But for those of us who remember, like...
It was great.
Tom Atkins is back on the screen again. Tom Atkins may not have the same, you know, like, cult movie cachet as, say, Bruce Campbell. Mm-hmm. But would I blow your mind if I told you that they both appeared in a movie together?
What?
Hold on. Wait, no, don't tell me. Let's try to figure this out.
Maniac Cop.
Shut up, Sean.
God damn it, Sean.
No one asked you over there in the corner.
That's right. Well, the listeners probably haven't heard that yet, so. But yeah,
okay.
It is Maniac Cop.
It is Maniac Cop. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's just great that they're both like, you know, the two main characters of that movie. So that's like, you know, geek explosion overload.
I was hoping maybe he was in the corner of Escape from LA in that surgery scene with Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
Like he was one of the people with like prosthetics on his face or something.
I feel like Colin would have known and made sure we knew.
Like, that's Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
Well, it's his attitude in this, right? Like every time it's like, Detective Cameron, is that you? No. Bullwinkle Moose, you know, like...
Oh, my God. I wanted to punch him in the face.
Oh, yeah? You weren't digging on the whole the bravado?
I mean, some of it. Like, towards the end, like, at the end when he's, like, full-on, like, badass cop, then it's fun. But at the beginning, like, I really wanted to just punch him in the throat. Sorry.
Well.
Yeah.
Crushing. Blow.
I have more thoughts on that when we get to wrap-ups, but...
Throat punching?
Yeah. Well, just Tom Atkins in general. We'll get to it.
Okay.
We'll get to it.
Well, the plot conspires to... Well, Tom Atkins has, like, a B plot, which I was like, this really doesn't tie into the main plot of the movie, which is, you know, obviously getting to the alien infestation and the zombie climax, mm-hmm. right? Like his story relates back to the 1950s prologue where he was the ex-boyfriend of the girl who gets murdered.
Right. Who he saw at Inspiration Point or whatever.
Lover's Lane.
And was just like, just go home. Mm-hmm. And also, back then in the 50s, not ridiculous. Average guy.
Right. Yeah. Character. Exactly.
Because he wasn't hard-boiled yet.
Right. Yeah, yeah. The event that made him hard-boiled.
Yeah, because he spent the past 27 years stewing over this girl that he feels responsible for and reading detective comics.
And
he had like a million of them.
And as Holly pointed out while we were watching this, drives the same cop car from 30 years before.
The same car.
The same 1950s
establishing that he lives in the past.
Who was his, like...
Jesus.
Whoa, man.
His, partner detective that every time he was on screen put a stick of gum in his mouth. Oh, the black guy.
Standard black guy? Yeah.
Because it's not an 80s movie if you don't have the white cop with his black partner.
I thought that was a reference something maybe I didn't get. Like, I thought...
No. I think it's just...
Because it was so in your face, like obvious every time. Like,
that was the was actor an maybe choice. Trying to steal a scene.
An actor's choice.
Like, look at me. This is like, my little bit of business.
I feel like he was trying to combat the other guy who was always eating a sandwich.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you guys, I've got gum. You got sandwiches? I got gum. Yeah. You know?
That was hilarious. The big shot in the morgue when the cops are called to investigate this.
Like, slams down a briefcase.
Yeah, briefcase comes down. And you're like, well, this is going to be some high tech shit.
Oh, yeah.
Opens it up and brings out a sandwich.
It's a fucking sandwich.
Yeah. I think that's a running joke in movies, right?
Yeah.
The coroner is always eating around.
The coroner's always eating. Why is that a thing? Why is that a thing?
Because no one else, no sane person would do it except someone who's completely, you know, like immune.
Just completely desensitized to all death and just doesn't. Yeah. It affects him none.
Well, it's
not that you wouldn't want to keep like a medical facility clean.
Right. And sanitary. It's like when we watched the Frank Langella Dracula. Donald Pleasance is eating in every single scene he's in. Every scene. He's just stuffing his face for no reason.
Brilliant move.
Other than character choice.
Yeah. But the kids are seen at the facility. This is how they get placed there by the night watchman or whatever. The screaming like banshees. Screaming like banshees. That's great.
The Asian dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That all. That
your impression
said that
sounded much more Eastern European.
Yeah, it really did.
Give me a better one.
No. I'm not going to go there.
Nope.
Nope.
So.
David Paymer's in this movie.
He is.
Classic character bad guy. Howard the Duck, No Holds Barred is what I know him from.
He was Billy Crystal's brother in Mr. Saturday Night.
Wow. Sure he was.
Wow, you watched that.
I thought No Holds Barred was a deep cut, but you know, you just outdid me there.
No, Mr. Saturday Night is a deep cut. Yeah.
I've seen No Holds Barred.
Yeah.
No.
Nobody saw Mr. Saturday Night.
Nobody saw that movie.
Who was it about?
I don't know if it was a made-up character.
No, it's about somebody.
Is it?
Like, Mr. Saturday Night's about a real...
Is it biographical?
It's a biopic.
Yeah, I think it is.
Wow. Well, like, Brandon's looking it up.
It 100% is. Sean, you know?
Nope.
Okay. Nope.
You're so helpful. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah. But yeah, he's one of those guys, you know his face, but you don't know his name. But
and he's very young in this.
Yep. And he's classic David Paymer.
And he
same thing he always does.
Becomes a zombie?
Mm-hmm.
Every time?
No, No, I wish in No Holds Barred he became a zombie. That'd be a great ending to that movie.
That would be a great ending.
The movie gets a lot of mileage out of like these jokes, right? Like David Paymer dies, comes back in the morgue, and then he's walking naked with the V incision from the autopsy, blood all over him.
With the scissors hanging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't see this initially. The joke is you see him stumbling from behind, heading down the hallway, and there's another guy, the night watchman or whatever. Mm-hmm. Coming towards us, who's engrossed in whatever he's reading.
He's just like looking at reports and he's just like, night man, see you tomorrow, or something like that.
I don't want to interrupt that. Go for it. Mr. Saturday Night is not a biopic. I apologize.
All right. Well,
that's good.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah. And also,
it's probably good that that's not someone's
subject,
actual life.
Mr. Saturday Night cost $43 million to make and took in $13 million at the box office.
$43 million in what? 80 some?
91?
Still, that's Clinton dollars, probably.
It lost 30 mil.
Yeah.
They really believed in that movie.
Yeah.
I worked at a movie theater. That's why I know it. Otherwise,
that's why you saw it, too.
And I remember there was never anybody there. It played for about 2 weeks and out the door.
And it was out. But you saw it in that 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I was an usher. I had to watch.
See, yeah.
Was it like Billy Crystal?
It was dramatic. It was heavily dramatic. Was it heavily dramatic? Yeah, it was not like that.
What a bummer, because you just briefly.
That's not why you want to see Billy Crystal.
It's about like a comedian, like a Catskills comedian.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're thinking like, okay, this is going to be nothing but Billy Crystal like camp in your face. It's going to be hilarious.
No, because the brothers don't get along, and then it goes through many years, and they're old men at the end, and they don't like each other.
Nope, not interested. I'm out.
I'm out. Nope.
But the humor in this.
Gold, I'm out.
I guess you're shooting for the style of jokes or whatever. It's like, how does this compare to like House or the Monster Squad? Is it as successful at those at mixing like the jokes and the horror?
Well, I think Monster Squad does it much better because you can put yourself in the mind of like children being lame,
right?
Having lame jokes, and that's like a thing that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like in Big, when Tom Hanks and his friend have that dumb saying that they say to each other.
Yeah,
like you can put yourself there, like, okay, yeah, we were all kids, we all thought dumb shit.
Yeah,
as opposed to just like a bunch of, I don't know,
college kids. Yeah, no, Monster Squad, it feels more natural.
Correct,
it feels way more natural. This movie, it feels like we wrote a script. Fuck, we got to put in some jokes in here. It's Miller time, right? You know, like that's what it feels like with this movie.
Again, I didn't mind it. Even if they were shoehorned in, it made me laugh.
Right. It's not to its detriment at all, but it's definitely not as natural as it would be in like a Monster Squad type situation.
See, it got more eye rolls out of me than it did chucks. So.
Well, you're like, really?
Yeah.
Did they go there?
Especially the detective at first, I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's like the third one, like the, it's like, all right. I mean, he kind of redeemed himself at the end with
it. Oh, yeah, at the end, I was getting into it.
Through the comedy or through his badassery?
I think the bad...
I think it helped.
I think the badassery went up, and the comedy, he started doing it a little bit less.
Yeah.
And it worked. Like, if he was that steady character through the entire thing, it would have been great.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I'm asking is because, you know, House is a favorite movie of mine, and, you know, Fred Decker, I believe, was credited with the story on it, so... And a guy named Ethan Wiley actually wrote the movie, and the way, like, that movie's batshit crazy, and the humor in that seems to work. Like, it works as a comedy, even though...
It's black comedy. It's...
Right, because it's basically a psychological horror movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, but, you know, again, if you haven't seen House, and the image that you have in your mind off of me saying that doesn't represent the movie
at all.
It's designed and directed as a comedy.
Yeah.
And I think in that movie, maybe it works a little better than it does here. But I think that this, well, you know, I don't know, the mixture of, you know, trying to keep the tone light and at the same time have like legit, you know, horror movie moments or whatever, you know, practical creatures and all that stuff. It's like, you know, I think that's what goes to defining those type of like fun 80s horror movies, right? Where you're trying to, like, you know, we keep saying like Return of the Living Dead or Night of the Demons, like that, where they have like enough jokes that land, you know, and a lightness of tone, but they're still able to deliver like this, you know, the gore moments or whatever that the audience is showing up to see. You know, it's like, this is why I'm paying my ticket. Because I want, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Night of the Demons does it really well, honestly.
Well, it delivers a lot more gore. Like, you know, you get.
Mm-hmm. A lot more.
Yeah.
Like with House, I feel like House was more deliberate. Like it had a specific structure. Like they knew what they were doing. They knew the formula that they were following with House. Whereas with this, it seemed a little more, like I said, it seemed more forced. Like they just had to keep adding things. Like House, it seemed like they knew what they were doing from the beginning. This one, it felt like hodgepodge. You know what I mean?
Patchwork.
Yeah, exactly.
Did it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Isn't what you're saying that they...
Because you had like the John Hughes moments with like Anthony Michael Hall and his buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously, at the beginning when we're getting to know the frat boys, I was like, this seriously feels like a poor man's Weird Science.
Yeah, it really
like,
did.
Like it did not... I was like, is this a horror movie? Like it felt so... weird, like it was trying to be.
I didn't mind that though. Honestly, I didn't.
You didn't find it distracting?
I don't know. I kind of liked it. And then when like the detective and okay, what's the guy's name that I keep calling Anthony Michael Hall?
Chris Jason Lively is Spanky? The actor's name. Yeah.
Was he in Spanky? Well, Detective and Spanky finally like come together like as a team. Mm-hmm. I feel like those disjointed like two separate places come together and it's kind of enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. See, but that's the thing. But up until that point, it feels weird. When sure. they come together, then it's like, okay, I'm on board with this weird, like, buddy mm-hmm. cop frat boy combination. I'm down with it. But before then, it just seems all over the place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there was a scene, maybe talking to what you're talking about. Like, there was a scene early on where JC is like, you know, he's talking to Chris. They're in the dorm room and he has like this monologue where he's mm-hmm. like, you know, explaining like, I'm just trying to do this, you know, fuck you. It's like, I was trying to do this to help you out and all.
Yeah.
And like, it's probably the best acted scene really in the movie. And it's like, it's not really funny. It's like actual, like,
it's kind of tense to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, it was very John Hughes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And it works as like a dramatic thing, but does it feel, you know,
well, and to follow that up with just like a shot of a slug being pulled by fishing wire was just like, okay, that's a little
off brand here. Yeah.
Was that the next shot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They cut to
their dorm was nicer than most college dorms too. Holy
I thought it was like a prison. Except for they were both on
like Shea lounges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beds. But like but their counter space that they had behind their beds, that is not realistic to any college dorm.
But their room was really small.
Yeah, that was like, pretty accurate. But like the dorms where I went to school were like two beds and that's it. Like no table, no desk space, nothing.
See, no, we hooked up our shit hot. Yeah.
That's what you have to assume. They already did this, right? They hooked it up.
We put one of the dressers. We put the dressers because each had like a closet area mm-hmm. kind of. So we put the dressers in the closets. Mm-hmm. Boom. Immediate room right there. Bunked the beds. Idea. And then we had a really good little kitchenette. We had, I don't know, it's pretty badass.
I don't know.
We built one. We made it work.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was going to say, shit, man. Fridge. I had a bed and a dresser, and that was it. Like, no air conditioning either. And that was.
We did not have air conditioning
either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so I saw that dorm and was like, man.
Monmouth College, Win Bigler Hall, what's up?
When they cut over to the sorority, like, I think, we get inside Cynthia's room, mm-hmm. and it was like, considerably larger, it seemed right. like holy cow. And then there was like the scene of the girl waiting for the zombie cat to return home, and like I was like, that can't be her room, right? And I'm looking around, is there a bed in here? So it's like a common room or something, right?
That looked like a funeral parlor.
Yeah, it really didn't did it?
Yeah, the flower couches and like the crystal lamps, it looked like a funeral
parlor. The weird datedness of their sorority house was weird. Yeah. Like, okay, that sorority house looked older than the sorority house in Black Christmas. And that Black Christmas was like a good 10 years before this movie.
Yeah.
Can somebody out there answer a question for me? Connell, let me know. If you were in a sorority or a fraternity, do you have like a baller room that you have by yourself?
See,
From like, tell us what your sorority all I see is from like the movies. Like.
It's my only reference when to I frat
was,
houses.
Okay, when I was, right. when I was in here. College, I never went to a sorority, but I was in a couple frat houses. And they were never like they are in movies.
They were pretty gross usually.
They were disgusting.
You still bunk up with people, right?
Yeah, there were small rooms and multiple people in there. It was disgusting.
Because every movie has like, everybody has like, it's like a fucking apartment mm-hmm. with like a common living room.
Not the frat houses I was in. They were nasty. Well, shit,
I was thinking that this was a pretty small room. The fact, I mean, just, you know, you're saying that it's bigger than a real dorm room. But to me, I was like, that's like they're training these kids for prison. This is like a prison cell, right?
Most dorms are like closets.
And like, bam.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to be like in an older dorm room because I've also stayed in ones like my girlfriends were in college that were just like painted cinder block.
Yep.
And that was very depressing. Mm-hmm.
I've been in there.
That's pretty standard. Mm-hmm.
Bummer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I want to make 2 points before we get to the end of this. But the B story that we were talking about that Detective Cameron is, you know, witnessed or he murdered the in cold blood, the axe wielding killer that killed his girlfriend.
Right.
And buried her under the house mother's cottage
before it was built.
Right.
The maniac killer. Yeah. He buried him in it was a vacant lot at the time.
So his whole purpose in this movie is like, you know, to reminisce, live in the past and keep, you know, digging up the idea that like, you know, I did this a long time ago. He confesses it to Spanky at one point.
Which I thought was a pretty hilarious scene.
Yeah. I leveled off the gun at his chest. You know what I did next? Should you be telling me this? Close. I pulled the trigger.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, that's funny. It's like the dialogue in this, I thought was, I don't know if it's entirely successful, but they're like, you know, layering in those like little humor beats. But yeah, so of course, with these brain eating slugs, whatever, the right
brain spawning,
the creeps.
Yeah, the creeps getting in. They bring the axe-wielding killer back to life. Yeah. And so he gets to track him down and kill him again.
And that's all I thought about, too, was, like, I can buy, I mean, whatever. I can buy these things, getting into people and making them zombies or whatever. Or even getting into dead people and making them, because it doesn't matter, right? But that guy would have been straight up decomposed. And how would the slug...
He wrapped him in plastic. No, I know.
He wrapped him in plastic and then buried him in the ground. And then they built a house on top of it.
He was perfectly preserved. No, okay.
That thing, that slug would not have been able to get there. We have no indication that these slugs can dig.
That's true. We just see them on top of the ground pulled by fishing wire all the time. That's the only way we see them.
And we don't see them burrow.
We don't see them burrow.
They could dig.
They're not the fucking tremors.
No.
You know?
If one even dug, they could tunnel. And if one dug into the dead guy's mouth under the thing.
Yeah.
Even then, like, you don't have any room to, like, move your arms to, like, dig out.
How did he get the fuck out? Yeah. How did he
He's
dig out?
He's got an axe. He dug himself out with the axe. We heard him.
What?
He was, that's what so are much, you talking
this
about?
This is way too much legwork we have to do.
There's, like, 40 years compacted on top of him. It's just, like, earth. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. There's no extra, there's no, like, Kill Bill 5 inches to
right,
punch
exactly.
At.
Exactly.
It's all hollow so space much under there. Who knows? Zombie X-Man comes back from the dead and kills the house mother.
And possesses the dog.
And yeah, because in this movie, we have a possessed cat. We've got a possessed dog. Eventually, we have a busload of possessed fraternity brothers.
Which is almost shot for shot the way American Horror Story did their third season pilot for Coven.
Yep.
When you see a fraternity bus full of fraternity bros flip over and they all get horrendously murdered, almost exactly like this scene.
Very much.
So like I was saying, as much as this movie wears its influence on its sleeve, so many things since then have taken from this movie without crediting it.
But that's
it
assuming
blows
that
my mind.
People actually saw this movie, because apparently on
its too
release,
similar for them to have not seen it.
Yeah?
It really is.
Well, I mean, how else are you going to get the Frankenstein guy who's got like a bunch of different...
That's exactly what happens in American Horror Story.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like that's what how I'm saying. Like, it's too similar to have not seen it. Someone that worked on the staff, it might not have been Ryan Murphy, but someone on the staff has seen this movie. Or at least is aware of that scene in this movie, if nothing else.
They'd have to be, because this movie's a goddamn horror classic.
I have a feeling Ryan Murphy probably saw it.
He's probably well versed in his horror history.
He's taken influences from many things.
From many things, yeah.
Well, this is one of those movies that, like, when it came out, it didn't get a good release. Like, it was released regionally, not, like, everywhere at once in the country. It had bad, you know, publicity or none, and so it failed and didn't do anything. This was Fred Dekker's first movie. His second one the following year was The Monster Squad. He lucked out that The Monster Squad was already in production when this one came out, so its failure couldn't impact, you know,
him getting a job.
Like, you're stuck with me.
So then The Monster Squad came out and drastically underperformed. And so then I think he limped along for a couple of years and then got RoboCop 3. And even though I think that one Orion Pictures went bankrupt and that one didn't get a proper release. And so then they basically put Fred Dekker on the pariah list. But years, you know, have gone by and it's like all these kids, you know, myself included, when I was a kid, I saw, you know, all of his films and have held them all in high regard. And now it's like, you know, now he's kind of getting his, you know, comeback, you know, due or whatever and getting to write, you know, The Predator. So it's an interesting career arc. Both him and Shane Black, like, we're in a fraternity together at UCLA.
Now it all makes sense.
Yeah. And that's why
now
they worked
all
on all these
others.
Films.
Yep.
And this is why eventually, you know, Shane Black's resurgence with Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm. It's all about who you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say The Nice Guys, but nobody saw that. But you should.
No, you should go see The Nice Guys. It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah. That's a fucking great movie.
I have not seen them.
It's one of the best of last year.
It's
one of the best movies of 2016, hands down.
You gotta see it, dude.
It's a great movie. Everyone go see it.
Yeah.
And pay to see it because it's great. It's worth it.
Yeah.
I have trouble seeing new movies.
Well, now it's an old movie. It came out last year.
This is like an 8-month old movie now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're behind the times, so it's perfect for you.
So this movie culminates in the zombie apocalypse. Okay, it's a small self-contained zombie apocalypse. It leads to the poster phrase or line wherever the detective's in the sorority. And it's like, I got good and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here. The bad news is they're dead. And so
I really love that. Actually.
Also,
I
like that too. Yeah. I hate to keep bringing up the slug thing.
Do it. Okay. Just do it.
This the is
slug the slug could infect a fucking cat. The whole fucking country in like 2 days,
right?
Would be zombies
because there's so many of them.
There's so many cats around everywhere.
Yeah, but they're attracted to the brain, right? And this is what they want to get into the brain. And it just so happens that in this sorority, one of the girls is doing a science project. This is the Schrodinger's brain. It's Chekhov's brain, right?
Chekhov's brain, yes.
She puts a whole stack of bottles of brains, jars and brains, down in the basement. Jars. So they're ignoring the neighborhood cats and dogs, and they're just hanging around the sorority because they're trying to get into the basement because that's where the brains are.
Yeah.
I will... Just so I don't keep bringing it up, I'm going to go with that.
You know, you bring up a good point, though. It is a very contained outbreak, you know?
And if it was just people, and then I can understand with it, okay, they're on a college campus, and they're kind of, they don't do anything else, whatever. Mm-hmm. I can see where that could be maybe contained. Mm-hmm. But it's going to hit just like a cat or a dog.
Right.
I was like, that's everywhere.
Yeah.
You're done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and all the people. It's amazing how many times, like usually in this type of movie, you know, you expect you blow the head off of an infected creature, the slugs pour out and immediately jump into all the people who are standing in the near vicinity. But these ones don't. They like fall to the ground and run off into the bushes as fast as they can, presumably to infect something later on when they can catch them unawares.
I mean, I figured they'd stop going after. They must have a specific taste for human brains, which is weird coming from a spaceship.
Yeah.
That probably has never seen humans.
Yep.
Because you think they'd go after like the lowest common denominator and you'd see a bunch of fucking infected like possums and raccoons. They think they'd go for what's
Brandon,
easiest.
I got this
trash
one
animals.
Too. Maybe the alien brain is remarkably similar to the human brain.
Humanoids?
Yep.
Yeah.
Because sure, they did. Fine.
I will stop bringing it up right now. I'll stop.
Sure. Rationalize it however you need to, Colin.
There you go. Like pigs or like humans, maybe the aliens are. Okay.
I did love the part. Love the part. When she walks in, like, it's just the arm full of brains in a box. Like, where can I keep these? I was like, this is good. I like that.
Yeah.
It's just foreshadowing. The basement?
The basement? I just don't want to see them.
The detective, well, because JC unfortunately gets infected and dies, but he is able to talk on a tape recorder and tell Chris that, you know, you can kill things with heat, with fire.
Yeah.
Well, you can kill most things with fire.
Well, and how do you, okay, so how do you figure that out? He lit one on fire with the matches.
The matches.
Well, he was trapped in the bathroom.
So why would you do that?
Because that's the only weapon that he had at his disposal.
Yeah.
I would argue a single match isn't a weapon.
He lit the book.
He lit the book.
He lit the book.
There wasn't much left in that book, though. That book was almost empty.
A small torch.
So he lit the book, and he just like, was the thing attracted to heat, or just like happened?
They were just running past.
So just happened to, thank God, one of them just happened to hit this flame.
Brandon, I saw it happen.
Yeah, no, it was like someone salting a slug. You know, he was just waiting for it. He's like, I'm going to try this, see if it works.
Salt the snail.
It's always
there's not enough salt in the world for her.
I love it.
Sorry, guys.
It's okay. It's always sunny. We're back.
Yep, right.
It's like salt. He just waited for it. It was running back and forth. And then when he knew, he threw the matches down. He's like, let's try fire, you know?
And we were kick ass.
So here's what I would have done. Why didn't he just use one of the matches? Because there was like three left in there. Light some motherfucking toilet paper on fire and toss it out there.
I actually thought that too.
A big old lot of it.
Yeah.
And then you'd odds are, if this works, they'll get rid of a ton of them.
Yeah. When he was sitting there, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, is he going to light the roll? I would light the roll.
Yeah.
So especially after like the one worked, I would say, fuck, okay. I'm surrounded by rolls of flammable paper.
Damn it. Everything's collapsing under the weight of logic.
I can even light one end and like roll this fucker out there. So I have a clear path to the door.
Just thinking that.
Yep.
Well, shit. There goes my love for this movie. I can never watch it the same way again. No, that's not true at all. So, you're right. That probably would have been a better plan.
Yeah.
But knowing that fire kills them, the detective goes and sees the legend Dick Miller in the police station lockup.
Is that why they said it's Miller time?
That's a reach.
I think it's because
that's a reach.
That's a reach. He was in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes, he was.
Bucket of Blood.
Yeah.
Tales from the Crypt. Demon.
Was he the garbage man in the Burbs?
Probably.
Probably.
He's in like all of Joe Dante's movies.
Mm-hmm.
So they requisition a flamethrower, which, you know, every police station, I hope, I love has that. Just laying.
Post around. The thing. All of them have that, right?
I need a flamethrower. You know, oh, okay. Let me go get
that
it.
That was like Leslie Nielsen style.
Yeah. Convenience.
Just like ridiculous, like comedy.
Yeah. Yes.
That was just like, oh, I need a flamethrower. Like, oh, yeah. He just like walks in the
here
back.
You see it.
And he's walking in the back, like, right, like ready to go.
Yeah.
I didn't mind that. I liked that, actually.
Watch the pilot light. It's tricky.
Oh, another. That's Chekhov's pilot light.
Yeah.
So this ends up with Chris. With the flamethrower. No, sorry. Cynthia has a flamethrower. Chris has a shotgun. And they're fending off like the hordes of the living dead.
Right.
This is where the movie reaches
off the,
peak awesome.
The frat boys of the living dead.
Right? Peak yeah. awesome at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's getting pretty awesome at this point, yeah.
Because Detective Cameron's inside like wheeling around going, ah, psh, 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 yeah. blowing away tons of zombies. Yeah.
He's like cowboy style, shooting them up.
Although prior to this, I have to mention, there's a great scene that we were trying to put together, like where I was listening to you guys put it together after where he's after he kills the undead axe murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he goes back to his house and he is attempting suicide.
Oh, right.
Right.
But yeah. The way the movie does this, you just see him like lounging in his house like we've seen it a dozen times in the movie.
Yeah, he's just chilling on his couch.
So he's flicking his lighter back and forth in his finger.
Not lighting it, not but lighting just playing it. With it.
Yeah.
And there's a knock on the door. He's like, ugh. There's a knock. He keeps knocking. He's like, fine. So he gets up and answers the door. But to answer it, he has to pull off all this tape. And you're like, yeah. The fuck? It's like you're trying to keep the slugs from getting in or whatever.
Right.
That's and immediately what I thought.
Yeah. And so Spanky's out there. Like, they got alfalfa and we need to, you know, they're getting into your brains. And we got to go. We got a mission. We got to do stuff.
Got to use fire. Let's go.
So then there's this shot of him, like, putting all of his guns and strapping on all of his gear.
Strategically in front of the camera. The crotch shot with the gun.
Yep. And we noticed
that was a weird angle.
Yeah, it was.
I was fine with it, but it seemed purposeful.
It really was.
Yeah.
But it all leads up to the idea that he was trying to...
Sylvia Plath himself?
Yeah. Leaving the gas on. This was him about to blow himself up. Guys, I got a death wish. That was a nice way of... You know, revealing the intent of a scene, like a
was
little
it?
Bit of a
because it took
time.
Us a while to get there.
We all had to work together on that.
It was a teamwork effort to figure out what was happening.
I would have, yeah,
but
I
think got
I would have gathered it because I started thinking about that and as soon as I saw the tape. I'm like, oh, it's the slugs. And then when I saw the oven, I was like, oh man, I am stupid. Like, how did I not put that together?
Yeah, with the lighter. Yeah.
And then I thought he was just trying to like gas himself to death. I'm like, oh, he's fucking a lighter in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing again of the ending where he makes the noble sacrifice to contain all of the slugs in the brains in the basement and blow them up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a scene where our two hero and heroine end up in a garden shed with a lawnmower.
Yeah.
I know. You thought you were already at peak awesome. You could have gone an extra layer here. And I remember seeing this movie.
And thinking like, oh, Dead Alive.
I saw it before Dead Alive.
Once again,
like,
another movie that has taken influence from this. Yeah.
It was like, this would be cool if he actually mowed down a bunch of zombies with the lawnmower. He only mows down one. But Dead Alive, obviously, it feels like, right?
They had to have. Because Dead Alive came out after this. Yep. So they had to have.
Just went up one notch.
Yeah.
And into awesome zone.
Dead Alive went up a lot.
A lot. Yeah. Because that was a pretty intense scene.
Brain Dead for you folks outside of the U.S. You should check that movie out. So, yeah, once Detective Cameron actually blows himself up and destroys the sorority house, all of the slugs are dead.
Are they, Colin? Are they?
Well, this depends on which version of the movie that you've seen.
Oh,
interesting.
Because when I saw this movie originally on at its television broadcast, it ended the way that we saw it tonight. In the end of the movie, this is now called the director's cut, Detective Cameron, smoking corpse, staggers out of the house toward a cemetery falls down, slugs break out of his head, and then the alien ship returns with a searchlight looking for the slugs, and then cut to black, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was awesome because it tied in with the beginning, and it's like, okay, this is like a pretty decent ending for the movie. Rented it on video because I'm like, I got to see this movie again the whole way through on cut. And the ending, so after the house goes on fire, this is the way that it was in the theatrical release. Chris and Cynthia kiss, and then a dog comes walking up. She bends down and says, like, hey, puppy.
It's like the thing.
It's the creepy zombie dog, and it squirts a slug out of its mouth. Cut to black, the end.
I like that, too. I like both of them.
I like both of them, too. Yeah.
Well, I was watching an interview with Fred Decker. He said that the alien ending, obviously, was the original one that he wanted to do, but somebody got cold feet somewhere and they switched it over to doing this, the dog one, which he said he never liked because it was like, you spent, you know, an hour and a half with these people trying to beat this thing. And then at the end of it, the implication is that she just got infected after, you know, killing.
I mean, I prefer the cemetery one for sure.
It ties back into the beginning.
And yeah. Because otherwise that beginning scene doesn't really mean anything.
It makes it feel more purposeful if you cut back to it at the end like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I think. I think you have to have the book end. Otherwise, you take out the aliens at the beginning.
Well, maybe gives you a glimmer of hope, too, if you're, like, rooting for these people. Like, oh, the aliens are there finally now to try and take care of this shit. Like, they figured out where it was or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hopefully stop the Night of the Creeps 2 cemetery zombie attack. There was no Night of the Creeps 2.
I was just going to say, was there Night of the Creeps
2? So apparently the aliens were able to capture them.
Good.
That's what I like how big it says thrill me on the video box art in the back. It's like an inch high.
There's t-shirts with that on it.
Yeah.
So does that bring us to the end of our, before we go to mail and our wrap-ups, Night of the Creeps, or do you have any stray observations or thoughts?
I took notes on my phone, but I'm at 1%.
I'll get to it in wrap-ups.
Demon technology. Always failing you at the wrong time. We're still recording, aren't we? Yes, we are.
God, I hope so. Oh, we don't need a ghost in the shell repeat.
We don't need a ghost in the shell repeat, no.
One of the only things that I put was, in this dude's like futuristic fantasy, why is that girl wearing high heels in the sand?
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point.
I thought that was out of control.
Did you know that that was,
fantasy of a... It's him on the beach and this girl is serving him drinks in high heels
and a bikini. Sand.
Very obviously, like, kind of struggling to walk away in the sand in high heels. Yeah, it was just, like, hilarious.
Can you imagine? She was like, do I really have to? And they were like, yes,
they
do.
They did that take seven times and be like, all right, we'll just pick the best one.
I think Michaela pointed out, it was very much like the alternate scene in Wayne's World with Rob Lowe.
Oh, and it was totally so at the end of Wayne's World when they do like, let's do the hamming. And it's like Rob Lowe and Tia Carrera and she's in like the 90s bikini, swimsuit on the beach. Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. Yeah.
That scene was kind of goofy.
Yeah. It was out of step with the rest of the movie for sure.
It was.
Yeah. That was the Jaws moment. If you look at it like that, the using the people crossing in front of him.
Yeah.
To cut back and forth between.
But Wayne's World did that too.
Yeah.
I mean, Wayne's World did it after Jaws, obviously. But,
That's kind of goofy. I was like, because at first I was like, cause I didn't connect that it was him. I'm like, who is this old
man? Right.
With like a cabana hat on.
I was like, why is he sitting in the sand wearing a white tux? That's good.
Who is this fucking Colonel Sanders here? Like, what the fuck is going on?
A little mustache looking like Leon Redbone.
Yeah.
It's like a backdoor introduction to a character because we don't know who he is until he stands up in the dream and then he's a cop at the crime scene. Right. And it's like, oh, he's that cop as an old man.
This movie struggles with linear storytelling.
Yeah. Well, like he's on the beach, he's looking out, and he sees this like girl in a prom dress coming out of the ocean. I was like, what the fuck is this?
The problem
is
her hairstyle was different than it was in the 50s.
I didn't recognize her.
So you may not recognize her. And she's in color. But
Very confusing.
It would have been cool if she would have came out in black and white.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Oh, that would have been great.
Maybe they couldn't do that back then.
Better storytelling.
Yeah.
I'm sure they could do that back then.
In the 80s, they could have done that.
No, but to isolate one...
In the 80s, they could have done that for sure.
Didn't they do that in, They Live?
Yeah, they did.
There was no isolated colors. It was just black and white.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz with hand
paint. Oh, you're saying just change the whole.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying she comes out. She's black and white, everything else.
That color, is what I was
That's what he was saying, yeah.
I don't know if
that was definitely possible.
They were able to. Yeah. All
right, so before we run too long, maybe we should summon Igor, our mailman. Oh. Igor, where are you, sir?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Why, thank you, Igor.
They could have painted her in black and white.
If nothing else. That would have looked really cool, actually. Yeah, that would have been a great style choice.
Yeah.
We got a lot of mail this evening.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, all right.
Wow.
So, well done, again, Igor. We desperately want to hear from you, listeners. We love our listeners.
Yep.
And we'll read your comments on the air. You can get a hold of us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/SaturdayNightFreakShow.
On Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
Or by email.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com.
So, a user, CHH1138.
C-Huds?
That's what I wonder.
Platform?
Says, in each episode of the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, a group of friends gather in a dark, dank basement to review movies.
Is a summary of us, yes.
Yeah, he says, you never know. Well, this was a review on iTunes. So this is a, yeah. And all you never know what you're going to get. European Horror 1 week, Demolition Man the next.
Yeah!
The conversation is a great mix of knowledgeable film analysis and normal moviegoer BSing. The results is always entertaining. Freak Show crew has been podcasting for years. There's tons of episodes to choose from. Be sure to go back through their archives. There are a million movie podcasts out there, but the Saturday Night Freak Show is one of the absolute best. Highly recommended.
Oh, thank you.
Damn, that's
sweet. Yeah. Well, so nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
About Night of the Creeps, Dom Cree writes in.
What up, hey, Dom?
He says, I just want to know who in the blue hell picked this mind-numbing monumental pile of steaming crap. What? Just kidding.
Okay.
I was going to say, this seems like a movie he would like.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Whoever picked this is now officially my new motherfucking VP of the Saturday Night
Freak
Show.
Shit, we just got usurped. You hear that shit?
Watching this was a mind trip back to teenage years and video rental stores. I can even smell the crappy multicolored popcorn right now. 5 slug-filled exploded 1959 corpsicle heads out of 5. Oh, and of course, how could I forget the obligatory mention of the timelessly awesome 80s hair?
Yeah, wow. There was some great 80s hair in this.
There's also the Bradster. Ooh, straight up God. Babes in this movie.
Yeah.
That's real.
There was a lot of layering over like button-up shirts and plaid shirts with vests and stuff in this movie. A lot of that.
And the obligatory 80s, if you're doing a movie that's set in a sorority house, you're going to do a slow pan through the shower.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Where all the girls had like dry hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Dry hair in the shower. Yep. No tops, but you know.
Yep.
Robin Linneman Silverberg says, this is one of my favorite movies. I'd kind of like to know if you all see or feel the gay subtext between Chris and JC, or is it just me? Thrill me.
Like when they're actually talking about it?
Yeah.
I mean, because, I just think they're supposed to be like best buds. Like, I don't think.
But like Chris treats JC like shit most of the time in this movie. Like he totally. Like, he shoves him around, give me your pillow, all that, like...
I don't know, I think...
That was so he could...
I think
pillow fight.
Honestly,
they're just... I don't think it was gay.
Yeah.
They're just ragging on each other like buddies. Like, I'm super mean to Ryan Burritt all the fucking time.
Damn, Burritt, how you feel about that? Write in. Tell us.
Gary...
No, I didn't get the gay subtext, but I felt that, like, they were just, like... There was clearly an alpha and beta in that friendship, you know? But, like, it wasn't
a... thing. I'm really mean to my best friend.
Yeah, there you go.
Sometimes you go. People are just friends.
It was definitely no Nightmare on Elm Street 2 situation. That's for sure. It was not that...
JC took the lead a lot, though.
He said, like, that little speech, he stood up for himself.
Yeah, but, like...
And he, like, shut him down, like, I'm talking to this girl for you.
Yeah.
But it seemed like every time he did, there was repercussions for that. You know, like...
I'm not saying Spanky wasn't an asshole.
Yeah, yeah. But it was definitely no Nightmare on Elm Street 2 kind of, like, gay subtext. It was not that level of...
Ryan Burritt writes in.
Oh, shit.
He says...
After you just talk smack about it.
I am a sucker for Night of Movies because this is another one I love.
We know.
Gary Lee writes in, says, this is one of my favorites of all time.
Cool.
About My Boyfriend's Back, previous episodes. This is the last one they heard. Mm-hmm. They haven't heard Over the Top as of the time we're recording this. In our epic arm wrestling session. Gary Gilstrap writes in and says, "What's up, Internet Radio Superstars? I was super excited to find out that you were doing an episode on My Boyfriend's Back. I must have watched this movie 100 times as a child because for some goddamn reason it was the only movie my grandmother owned on VHS. It was my favorite film."
That's right.
Years had passed. And I had seen it. I had seen it or even thought about it until I signed up for Netflix. I was going through the horror category, and what do you know? My Boyfriend's Back came up. It was the first DVD I had Netflix send me, and I waited 3 days for it to arrive. I immediately popped it in the DVD player, was sad and disappointed for the next 90 minutes. While the movie had been part of my Halloween movie rotation for years, I will admit that it is a shitty, shitty, shitty film. Turns out kids are stupid, and sometimes movies blow.
I disagree. I had a thoroughly enjoyable time with that movie.
I did too.
Yeah. He does say, "Thanks for hours upon hours of great entertainment. Love the show."
Okay, thank you for that. Appreciate that. I agree with that part.
Colin loved reading that way too much.
Yeah. Yes, I did. Thank you, Gary. Now I'm not crazy. So we also posted a question to people on Facebook. What was the best zombie boyfriend / girlfriend movie? And Karate Warrior 2 writes in and says, "Wasn't there a Prom Night sequel, Prom Night 3? Yes, there was. Where it was a zombie. She hypnotized. I think she comes back. She hypnotized. He says, "Not exactly a zombie movie, but probably better than this. You guys hated this. I felt sorry for you guys. Prom Night 3 is not quite as brutal, but not as awesome either." Well, to be fair, Karate Warrior 2, only one of us really hated that movie.
Yeah.
Hated that movie.
It was a good time.
Mm-hmm. And Chris Huddleston writes in.
Seaheads!
And says, mm-hmm. "Regarding famous horror movie houses mentioned in this episode, on a trip to California a few years back, my fiance and I tracked down the Poltergeist house in Simi Valley. It looked pretty much the same as it does in the movie."
That's good, because a lot of those like famous horror movie houses, they change the appearance on purpose. Like the Halloween house is purple now.
Oh, really? Well,
it's a purple dentist office because they don't want people coming there.
And taking pictures in the front yard and shit.
Whereas the Nightmare on Elm Street house still has the red door and it's white and everything. And the Breaking Bad house looks the same. Like a lot of, you know.
Mm-hmm. And the Amityville house has those fucking square windows.
Yep.
God damn it.
Mm-hmm. But so it's awesome that, you know, at least a couple houses still look the same. But not everyone in California is a big fan of people coming, taking pictures in their front yard. So.
Yeah, probably gets old.
All right, but don't live in that fucking house then. There move somewhere else.
Yeah, I know. you figure you're moving. That's why you're paying the premium probably for the house. The move into a movie house.
I would imagine the realtor has to tell you that if you're moving in. This was used in this famous movie and people come here all the time.
What if it's like your dream house, dude? What if you love that house?
I feel like if you love that house, you love it because it was in that movie, right?
I don't know. I haven't seen the inside.
I don't.
Somebody's just looking like,
I'm seeing a Venn diagram that's a circle here.
It was about a witch.
What?
What
are you talking about?
You're having a revelation right now. Oh, he's having a revelation. Second
one. It was about a witch.
Pumpkinhead.
Yes.
Was it
Lamora?
Yes.
Lamora, A Child's Tale of the Supernatural?
Yes.
And then you skipped out before.
That was the other Brandon movie.
I was on for like a half hour. I'm sorry. Wow. That was a good movie. Previous podcasts with me are Lamora. And I forgot the other one now.
Deconstructing hair.
Deconstructing hair.
Not regarding Henry. Deconstructing
hair. Why'd you keep calling it regarding Henry?
That's a hair
stuck that way in my mind. Yeah. Similar titles.
Okay.
No, okay. I don't know if they are or not. They are to me. So
does he have brain damage?
Skipping or mixing them up. So now we should probably go around the room and do wrap-ups and find out what everybody thought about Night of the Creeps. So you've been listening the whole episode. You're probably thinking that everybody's leaning one way or another, but this is where the suspense comes in, folks, because you really don't know until it comes out. Holly, what'd you think of Night of the Creeps?
Night of the Creeps. Well, you know, the first half, I gotta say, didn't thrill me. It took me. I'm sitting there watching it, and it took me a while to get into it. Because at first, I was like, "Man, I'm just not really feeling how much this movie's jumping around." It was just a little too unstructured, I thought. I appreciated all the references and the fact, like, seriously, the director really wanted to do 3 different movies, it felt like. And I appreciate that you wanted to do those 3 movies, but at first it didn't flow. In the end, it did kind of all come together. And the last, I don't know, was like 20 minutes of the movie was pretty fun. So in the end, I did start enjoying it a lot more. It was not as gory I don't know why I thought it was going to be more gory. I didn't really have any specific impression of this movie, but I did have this weird feeling that there was going to be more graphics in it and or more graphic effects. And it didn't really deliver all that much, but it was still fun. It was decent. There was parts that were disappointing. I really wanted more out of the lawnmower.
Like, watch Dead Alive. You'll get it. You'll get it.
Is when
have you never seen Dead Alive?
I haven't. No.
Oh, well, what?
No.
I guess what's going to be a future freak show pick now.
Wow.
I saw the trailer for it and I was like, oh, that looks like fun.
It's Peter Jackson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. That is a freak show movie.
Yeah.
If there ever was one.
If there ever was one. Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, good Lord.
Yeah.
I haven't.
You're missing out.
So my lawnmower needs will be filled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, good. They will.
All right. Good.
110%.
By the way. Yeah. You even be like, that's a little bit much.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. Like they could have stopped that a few minutes early. Yeah.
Oh, gross. Yeah. And like I said, I was a little annoyed by the detective in the first half, but the second half he was a lot more fun. So yeah, I think the whole thing it picked up more. A lot of the cheesiness I felt was too forced. Like there's such a fine line in B movies like this where yeah, they know what they're doing, but it's like they're trying too hard. And that movie did hit this movie did hit those points a little too much. It did feel a little forced, but it didn't keep it from being enjoyable. I did like the weird beginning with the little aliens. It made no sense, but I kind of loved it. The freaky little Teletubbies were great. I really do want to watch that movie. I want to know more about them. I think that'd be great. I liked the 50s effect with that storyline. And then once I got past like the John Hughes and the weird science bullshit, like it passed. It worked for me. So it did take a little bit getting to it, but overall I thought it was fun. You know, as far as the night of movies go, I think it's a good time. So I would recommend it. Yeah. I liked it. Brandon?
All right. Let's see here. I really enjoyed a majority of this movie. Even the things that I was bitching about this entire episode, I did not bother me about it at all.
It's weird.
It really, honestly, kind of worked on all levels for me. I really enjoyed it. Now, a lot of time I have a hard time with, like, I don't know, movies that are self-aware just seem smarmy to me. Like, okay, I fucking get it, you know? Exactly. But for some reason, and I don't know, especially self-aware horror movies can be difficult. I mean, it's very few that I like. Obviously, like Cabin in the Woods is...
Definitely.
I mean, it's just amazing.
I love that movie.
And
sets a bar, a really high bar.
Uh-huh. And in the first little bit of this movie, I thought that's how I was going to feel about it. But I go through enjoying the entire thing. I would watch it again. Absolutely recommend.
Yeah.
All right. So a couple things about this movie. So start off the bat with some real deep cut nerd stuff.
Bring
it. The title sequence. So here we go. The title sequence, the way the letters kind of come in, is very much Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Stranger Things definitely took like the red letters like glowing and moving in very slowly.
Very much.
But I love it. I'm like, great. I love this Stranger. Like I said, so many things have taken things from this movie that I didn't realize until I watched this movie, mm-hmm. which is weird because none of them acknowledge it. No one acknowledges they take stuff from this movie.
I also can't believe totally I have not seen this movie until now.
Yeah, I'm same
blown
here.
Away.
Same yeah. here. I have not seen this movie till now either. And I'm like, wow, so many things I love have taken things from this movie. How have I not seen it?
Right. And the fact that we were watching this, like after I was watching this movie and saw like the production value was great.
Yeah.
The acting was great and was ridiculous on purpose. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I assumed it was going to be like a really piece of shit movie because.
Yeah.
Right. Same here.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So I was wildly impressed.
The quality was a lot better than I expected.
Right. Exactly. Considering some of the stuff we've watched lately that had more of a budget than this movie, but mm-hmm. didn't look like it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, it has a really good, like how we talked about when we watched Night of the Demons, how like the title sequence was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Like this one was much more simpler than Night of the Demons, but it just is purposeful and beautiful, much like Stranger Things in a way. Mm-hmm. And like the nice, like they had like a nice monster type face on like the people's like names in the credits while the film was starting.
Yeah.
But that's stuff only people like myself notice. Like, real, like I said, real deep nerd stuff. For me,
right, graphic design.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can you tell?
Nice graphic design.
Yeah.
titles. It does.
For me, nothing gets me in hook, line, and sinker than saying 1959 in a movie. That is my my magic year, because that's the year that Grease takes place in, and that is the year that Richie Valens, Buddy Holly, and the Big Bopper all died in the plane accident. Yeah. So sweet. To me, when I hear 1959... I'm sold. I mean, let's do it. You know, I know this is a great year in American history. So when I heard that at the beginning, I was like, fuck yeah, let's go.
Ironically, and Fred Decker's birth year.
Really?
Yep.
Was he the one that made all that happen? Did he kill them? Did their death give birth to Fred Decker? There we go. There all is. Right. So when I hear that, I am 100% in. And the whole like Texarkana moonlight killer kind of setting the movie, I was actually more emotionally invested in than the rest of the movie. I kind of wanted to see more of that story. But I was still okay with that being the setup for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like I said, so many movies we love have taken from this movie. There's a scene where a character gives the same middle finger fucking crank move that Star-Lord does in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, but we were all doing that in the 80s.
Was that a thing in the 80s? Yeah.
I think it was that was a specific like third grade
thing. Yeah, but
okay, we had already talked about how James Gunn took the slithering worms from Slither for this. James Gunn wrote and directed Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm. James Gunn fucking loves this movie. There's no way he doesn't, right? Mm. Two of his movies have influences from this. I also kind of felt like it had maybe a tenuous Black Christmas connection just with like killings taking place in a sorority house. Because I had come probably a good 10 years before this, maybe a little more.
Well, there was a lot of sorority house killing in the 80s.
Though. Yeah,
the but Black Christmas was the... And also a more recent thing, I don't know if anyone has seen Stephen King's Dreamcatcher, but there's a scene where Jason... It is terrible. It is an awful movie. Don't go watch it if you haven't seen it. But there's a scene where Jason Lee is sitting on a toilet trying to reach his toothpicks that is almost exactly like the matchbook scene on the toilet. Almost like frame for frame, exactly the same. But I really liked this movie. I thought it was a good watch. I actually would like to pitch a remake of this movie. Bear with me here. So the movie takes place in 2032.
Okay.
Same kind of basic premise. Mm-hmm. When Chris and JC go down to the basement and open the what is it? Corpsicle? Is that what they called it, right?
Yeah.
It is John Spartan. Who was frozen in cryo jail in Demolition Man. Demolition Man crossover with Night of the Creeps.
Yes.
I'm pitching it. Make it happen.
1,000 times, yes.
They wake him up, and John Spartan's like, I hope you guys do whatever you need to do. And then, like, he becomes, like, the Tom Atkins character out of another time.
Well, that's got to be it, right? He's, instead of Simon Phoenix, it's a guy who's got the fucking slug.
Exactly. There you go. There we go. Let's... Copyright 2017 Saturday Night Freak Show. Actually,
that's Jason X, isn't it? She gets frozen. Yeah. The girl gets frozen in with Jason. And they both get thawed out in the future.
It's not John Spartan.
It's not the same.
But I will say I did meet Tom Atkins at a convention 2 or 3 years ago. He drinks and smokes IRL as much as he does in this movie. He does not do as much acting as he does showing up and being himself on set. At least that was the impression I got from when I met him. So, you know, I wasn't disappointed. I will say that. I would say this movie, like, even though, like Holly pointed out, it was like three different movies kind of like shoehorned together because this is the budget I have. Mm-hmm. It was still a fun watch. Mm-hmm. Even though if you poke too many holes in it, it'll fall apart for you. But I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah. Well, even poking all like the questions that I had didn't make me like the movie less.
Right. Exactly.
And in fact, I like the kind of three movies in one idea of it, or four movies in one, too, if you count like film noir, crime, drama.
Slasher movie, zombie movie, detective
I have a problem.
Texarkana Moonlight Killer, slasher.
Horror movies in general is because I tend to have a problem staying interested in things for a long period of time. And so I really enjoyed that about it.
Because it kept changing,
Right.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of this movie since the first time I saw it, right? I saw this movie on late night TV or whatever, so I didn't catch it in its theatrical run, and I didn't see it on video. I saw it on TV, and I'm like, this movie's awesome. And then I had to go and track it down after that on VHS, had a copy of it, and then a strange thing happened. No one that I knew of this movie. because the only place you could find it was on TV or at the video store. And I don't know what the hell happened with Fred Decker's movies, but this is also, I think, which has given rise to like the legend of Fred Decker in certain circles. I mean, now we're past this. This stuff's available. But the fact that his two movies that he was most known for, The Monster Squad and this, bypassed the DVD era. So DVDs are coming out all over the place, and we're all going like, okay, at some point they're going to get around to putting out like The Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps, and it never happens. And this period goes on and on and on. Eventually we go into Blu-ray territory, and that goes on and on and on. And then one day there's like a screening at the Alamo Drafthouse in Texas where they played, I think, The Monster Squad first. And it was like a huge fucking deal. And then they got Fred Decker and the cast to come down there, and then they got a Blu-ray. And that made, I think, Sony go like, hey, don't we have one of his movies? This is what he thinks anyway. And then suddenly we got a Blu-ray slash DVD release of this. So the reason that you guys haven't seen it, and the reason that it's not talked about in, like, you know, you've probably seen Reanimator, or you've seen Night of the Demons, or you've seen Return of the Living Dead. You know, it's like those movies have been kept alive through multiple reissues over the years. And these ones, by just skipping that generation, it's amazing. It's like they're lost films. That's bad. The cover art too. That's
it is bad. Not cover
the
art.
Yeah, it's super generic, and the theatrical poster is a lot better than that. But yeah, so it's like an undiscovered movie that, like you guys were saying, it's like this is a professionally made film. It has a production value higher than, I guess, you know, some of the stuff that we cover on this show. You know, or maybe what you're expecting for a movie that you have never probably heard of, or maybe
Level or Night of the Demons level production value.
Same here.
Yeah, this is substantially like a higher budget. This is TriStar Pictures and Charles Gordon, the producer, his brother, and him, I think, produced the original Predator movie. So, I mean, like,
They paid for like three crane shots in this movie. Wow, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, so I think that its status has always made me like an advocate for it. You know, it's like, so maybe that's made me think of it as better than it is, because like, you haven't seen this movie, you got to see this movie, Night of the Creeps. You know, it's like, you should be talking about this. Like,
I mean,
you know,
it's crazier that it fell into like that weird middle ground for so long, and then when it comes out, because whenever that happens, it's just like piece of shit quality ever movie. Like, okay, well, I get why this never got re-released. So that's why I was just like doubly impressed by like the production value. I was like, damn.
Some things just get tied up in rights, or, you know, something like that. I mean, I remember hearing a story. There were a couple guys who were trying to remake a movie called The Changeling, right? They were talking about, like, you know, getting this movie, they had deals and all this. And I think it was the writers, right? The guys who did Sinister and Doctor Strange. And they found out, like, and they couldn't make the movie all of a sudden. Everybody's like, well, we can't actually do it. And I was like, why? And it turned out that the rights to the movie, one of the guys who held the rights was in prison for, like, tax evasion or something. And because he's in prison, he can't make any money off of, you know, the film. So they can't remake the movie. And the movie's held up. Like, then it doesn't exist. There's no Blu-ray release of The Changeling. And there's another movie that you probably should have seen that you haven't, because it's been out of, it's George C. Scott. And that, but it's been out of circulation now for, you know, it did come out on DVD, but it's been out of circulation for years because they can't re-release it. So it's weird things like that happen in the movie business. This movie, it has, you know, all the practical effects I like, the tone of it, the humor I like, I dig. You know, it's like it's a part and parcel with these other movies that we mentioned. However, watching it tonight, it's like if I can see the problems with it, and to be fair, you know, and criticism is that the musical score, I think, again, we were talking about this on Night of the Demons. There's certain scenes, like when all the dead guys are coming out of the bus, right? It's this low, ominous kind of, you know, electronic synth thing. And I'm like, but what if you played something that was up and you're trying to be frightening, but, like, you know, more bombastic, because they're moving really slow and the music's really, you know, it's just like a tone. And so it feels like the scene's going on forever. It's not exciting. How come it's not exciting? It's because the music isn't exciting you about it. So I wonder if, again, there's an issue here where, you know, it was edited with a snappier rhythm, and the score was, you know, not entirely redone, but tweaked in places, I think you'd have a stronger film.
What else?
The cues were just pumped up. Yeah.
And there's that thing that I hate that movies do where it's just like generic new wave song.
Yeah.
It's just all these things. I'm just like, just pay some fucking band.
Yeah.
Just pay for some real songs.
Well, because we were talking last week about Over the Top and its soundtrack. You know, it's like they're goofy.
They spent all the money on that soundtrack.
But at least, you know, that would be the you buy the soundtrack album. With this, they're like, you know, I mean, none of them are.
And there's like seven songs. It's like, this is our version of like a 50s song. Mm-hmm. This is you know, listen to New Wave.
Well, they did have one. That was a legit 50s song, wasn't it?
There was one.
I think it was a legit 50 song.
Yeah, one on the radio, but everything else,
There was one when I think the Bradster came to the door when he was a zombie. Mm-hmm. They were playing a legit song. That was
the same one that was playing on that same night, 1959.
Yeah, because I remember hearing that on the radio growing up. That's mm-hmm. a legit song.
Yeah, it's a little sad to think that like Over the Top had a more legit soundtrack than this movie, though. Like,
I mean, it's just a pet peeve of mine that I see in movies, especially from this era. You saw it all the time.
Yeah.
And throughout the 80s and early 90s, it was just like punk rock song. And I was just like, come the fuck on.
Mm-hmm.
Or just like, I don't know. It's a weird pet peeve. Maybe it's because I'm a musician.
No, but Over the Top had like Sammy Hagar, Robin Zander. Like they paid mm-hmm. money to Kenny Loggins. They paid money to several people for great songs. So it's weird that like a canon film that like, you know, is known for making crazy low budget movies spent more money on a soundtrack than a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know how I knew that Tom Atkins was a thing? No, I mean, I knew that, you know, he was an awesome icon of film. I went to a midnight screening of Suspiria at Chicago's Music Box, and there's a guy who's wearing a T-shirt that had Tom Atkins' face and said Atkins. It was a joke on the diet that was going on at the time, but I'm
love
like,
it.
That's fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. And there you go. I know that, like, the fact that I know what that is.
Yeah.
Right.
You know. Like Tom Atkins, movie treasure, should have done even more stuff. I mean, he's a legitimate movie star. I think the fact that he's in this movie elevates it, you know, just because that character is, to me anyway, that hard-boiled, you know, detective thing. He's awesome. And actually, Fred Decker said that the way that he came up with the movie, he had an idea that there was a guy, you know, a hard-boiled detective, wakes up from a dream, answers the phone, and says, "Thrill me." And then he's like, "That's all I got. Who is this guy? What's he doing?" He's like, "I got this idea of this other thing that had these two kids in it." And he's like, "Okay, so I know who those kids are. Whatever they did caused this detective to get involved." And that was like the process of how the movie came about. And then, you know, like this, just kind of, you know, the stew of like all of these sci-fi horror late night movie influences that he's had. Figure you get one shot at doing a movie, maybe you're gonna put everything that you love into it, and I think it shows. This is one of those mm-hmm. like kitchen sink movies for people who were born in the 50s, lived through the 60s and 70s watching those movies on TV, and in the 80s then we got like a lot of these, you know, homage movies. And this is one of the better ones, I think. So I would definitely recommend Night of the Creeps.
Yeah.
So next week.
Next week.
We're going to watch a movie.
What do you think?
That's chosen by Sean.
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 Urban Legend.
We're going to watch Urban Legend.
Urban Legend.
All right.
Not Urban Legend 2, surprisingly enough, but Urban Legend 1. I say this only because Jared Leto is notorious for picking sequels.
Yeah,
loves the sequels.
That's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. We hope you'll tune in. And until then, the basement is going dark.